Well, if you're feeling stressed out when you hear that now is the time for you to start writing the next great American novel or learn Swahili, you're not alone. The coronavirus pandemic has shaken the way we experience work and leisure time. But the key to success may not be focusing on what we're doing, but how we're doing it. With us today are two experts to talk about hobbies, mindfulness, and how to find time for joy during the pandemic. Jennifer Loudon's a personal growth specialist and author of the recently published book, Why Bother? Discover the Desire for What's Next. She's joining us from Colorado. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure thing. And also Jen Johnson, a mindfulness coach and counselor based in Wilmington. Jen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Jennifer, tell us what people have been experiencing in terms of doing hobbies, finding ways to use. Not everybody has leisure time. Of course, a lot of people working at home and doing double duty. We know that. But for those who are find themselves with leisure time, what are they telling you about what they're doing, if they're doing anything different?
Yeah, what I'm hearing a lot of people struggling with the fact that they're grieving, that they're feeling so much sorrow and stress about the uncertainty, even if they're safe at home and their jobs are safe. And they're finding themselves really distracted, unable to focus. And if they're really trying hard not to shame themselves, because there is sort of this meme that went around really early that you should use this time wisely. And I find that most people are struggling to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, part of it is struggling to concentrate when so many things are on your mind, even if you are not working at home. And then the added stress of being told that now's the time for you to, you know, take up gardening or whatever it was that you...
Yeah, I find people are getting pretty resentful about that.
Yeah. Well, Jen, what are you hearing about how much leisure time people actually have in this pandemic?
Yeah, similar to Jennifer, I'm hearing people are primarily overwhelmed. I think people underestimate the room and the space that stress reactions take up. And, when we're in a place of responding to real threats, people are struggling with fear and anxiety and insomnia and really not having the focus to immerse deeply in writing that next great novel.
Well, we heard from one listener in Brown Summit who found a way to create a new work-life balance during this time.
I feel like the work-at-home situation is difficult because finding a work-life balance is a real challenge. I work for a company that is basically shifting their business model. It's been fun, and it's been challenging, and it's been a great distraction. But I have ended up working even more than I would normally. And I'm in front of a computer screen, and I tend to turn into a big ball of tension. My shoulders are up around my ears. I'm literally sitting in the same position for 8 and 9 hours a day. So about 3 weeks ago, I instituted a yoga break at lunch. So I have a mental health break and a physical body break by going and doing a 30 to 40 minute yoga session. Yoga is not just a physical practice, but a mental one. And it really has helped calm me in this time of stress.
So that was Sarah Howard in Brown Summit. She's talking about how she's been using yoga as a way to help herself mentally and physically cope with the time at home that she's spending. Jennifer, what I heard there was somebody who wasn't looking at the memes so much and being, you know, the suggestions that you ought to use your time, but actually letting this time and her situation dictate the solution to how she should be using her time. Is that something we should maybe try to focus on? What is this time telling us about what we should do?
I think that is a brilliant possibility for us. Instead of looking at the old way of being, and that listener was a great example of her old structure and schedule is gone. And I've worked at home for 30 years, so you really have to create it from what is the day dictating? Okay, so there's all these Zoom meetings. How are you going to put in some breaks? How are you going to use Zoom differently so your eyeballs don't fall out of your head? And I think one of the ways that we can do that is by responding to it day by day instead of week by week, because things are much more flexible and fluid, especially if you're homeschooling the kids. And maybe asking yourself, what do you want to do to recharge yourself versus maybe what you think you should. Kind of lower the standards and respond more to the day.
And Jen Johnson, as a mindfulness coach, I wonder how we get there. Because remember, you know, good advice, let's pay attention to what's actually happening and let that tell us what we should be doing. But what we said at the outset was that we're so distracted by this, so filled with anxiety, it's hard even to allow ourselves to relax, to get to the point where we could ask such a question. How do we get ourselves to that point that we can actually look at what's happening and tell ourselves what should be next?
Well, great question. I love that question. I think you know, mindfulness is about turning toward what's here in the present moment with an attitude of non-judgment. And the human tendency is to want to cling to things when they feel good, want to turn away and escape when they feel unpleasant. And then we also get hung up in wanting things to be other than they are. And so if we can turn toward our own experience with an attitude of acceptance and non-judgment, this is happening now, now what? Then I think that in itself, just bringing ourselves into that area of the brain that relates with awareness of present moment, can start to calm us. But I really like to engage people in a practice, a daily practice of awareness of body, heart, and mind. And I think that serves as a great foundation in terms of what you're asking about, how we can bring people to that place of starting to get calm. Before we can get calm, we have to bring awareness to what our current physical, emotional, and mental state is. And then we can start to ask, given that, what's called for. And I think it's also important, you know, we talk a lot about the stress response in terms of feeling that fight or flight and stressed and overwhelmed, but there are a good number of people who respond to stress and potential threats by freezing. And so, you know, how do we teach those people to be aware of their freeze response and learn how to gradually take slow actions, small steps to kind of reactivate themselves? What? I see that a lot with people who are feeling kind of frozen and stuck and start to get depressed.
Yeah, that freeze response can be deadly, as deadly as the rest, and I think it is underestimated in terms of its toxic effect. But how do you get people in that point? I mean, suppose we had never heard of mindfulness before. Suddenly we're thrust in the situation, and now you're telling me I've got to take on this practice. And I say, Jen, I don't even know what you're talking about. What do you tell me?
Right. Well, I think, you know, we can practice formally or informally. I teach people how to do a formal practice of breathing, and one of my favorites that most people are pretty comfortable doing is called three-part breath. And we just start with breathing into the lower third of the lungs, expanding the belly, breathing into the middle third of the lungs, and breathing into the upper third of the lungs. And I find when I guide people and instruct people to, or invite them to engage in this practice, with usually about 3 to 5 deep breaths, you can see them. I was on a video session with a client yesterday, and I physically saw her shoulders drop. And so then inviting people to pay attention. What did you notice after 3 to 5 breaths of three-part breath? And they'll say, wow, I feel relieved. Like, I feel not as stressed. And people are not, you know, if we're not in the habit of being aware in this way, then more questions. Okay, well, what did you notice happened in your body? It felt softer. Okay, well, where did it soften? Oh, yeah, my shoulders. And I feel this lighter sensation in my chest.
I tell you what, Jen, we're going to take a deep breath right now and then return to this conversation with Jen Johnson and Jennifer Loudon as we talk about taking care of ourselves, mindfulness, and what to do with our time, whether we have more of it or less of it. We'll talk more about that on The State of Things. Please stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. If finding a work-life balance wasn't hard enough in normal times, the coronavirus pandemic has thrown in new complications. Some people have more work than ever, while others have been forced to take unprecedented and unexpected time off from their jobs. So how can we feel present and fill our time in meaningful ways, no matter what we're doing? We're continuing the conversation with Jennifer Loudon, a personal growth specialist and the author of Why Bother? Discover the Desire for What's Next. Jennifer is based in Colorado, also still talking to Jen Johnson, a mindfulness coach and counselor based in Wilmington. And we want to hear now from a North Carolina resident who talked about ways of approaching this new reality, the reality of unemployment, and filling the time.
Hello, I'm Ruby McClellan. I am a server and a ski instructor, and I was laid off on March 15th because of COVID, as a lot of people were, and I'm living with my roommate who is also a server and is also unemployed right now. I feel like there's a lot of rhetoric about learning new skills, making the most of your quarantine, but sometimes the weight of the world is enough stress to be putting on yourself. So my tactic has been to make mini day plans for myself every day to try to get myself to do a little more than the minimum, but not expecting too much. So can I cook a new recipe that maybe is a little bit time consuming, not something I would have cooked pre-quarantine? What movie should we watch tonight? I'm going to do a 20-minute yoga video today on YouTube. Playing music while doing everything. I feel like just little activities and holding yourself to doing them makes me feel like I'm having fun, because kind of what else am I going to do right now?
Ruby McClellan talking about creating structure and letting herself have fun after getting laid off. Jennifer, how do we make this time of exploration productive? I mean, do we, you know, sort of, if I do have time now, if I'm one of the people who's got spare time, do I just type hobbies into Google, or how? What's the, the best way to do this?
I think if there is an opportunity for some of us in this time, it is to begin to reacquaint ourselves with what we want, what gives us pleasure, what do we enjoy. I love that listener. She sounds like she's really being curious. She's having fun. She's exploring. So if we could set this, these next weeks or whatever it's going to look like, these months for some of us, as a time to go, well, if I didn't have to accomplish anything, if I didn't have to learn anything, if I didn't have to be a good person about this, what might be fun? What might I be interested in playing with or learning more about? And open it up in a more childlike way.
But those preconditions that you laid out are not easy for Americans. If I didn't have to be productive, if I didn't have to, right? I mean, that's where we have no identity if we're not doing the thing we're getting paid for.
I do think that is, though, another possibility, a way we could all grow through this, is what is it that I'm letting go of, what may I've been forced to let go of, that I don't actually miss, that I don't actually want to bother about? And obviously, putting on pants is one of those things. But, you know, what are some of the things that I'm not doing that are actually opening up the possibility for me to discover new things about myself? Our identities, our busyness, our job, in some way or another, they're going to come back. We're all going to figure it out. So if we just kind of hit the pause on those questions of who am I if I'm not striving, and ask myself, who do I want to be? What do I want to experience right now? I think at the very least, we could come out of this time not exhausted, which would be really useful.
But Jen, that suggests to me that you might have to flip the narrative in this, that instead of saying, how could they do this to me? I'm laid off. This is awful. I hate it. To actually look at this as a golden opportunity and say, what a gift it is to be in this position. I can't do anything about it. And honestly, if I could have done something about it, I would have stayed at my job. I get that. Nobody wants to not be helping their families be healthy and strong. But here I am, and I couldn't do anything about it. That's the thing. It's this helplessness in the situation to flip that narrative and say, well, since I'm helpless, where's the gold in this?
Yeah, I think, too, it's a matter of focusing on what can we control. You know, there are a lot of things we can't control, but there are many, many things that we can control right now. And I think one of the things that I'm inviting people to do during this time is more being, less doing, echoing what Jennifer said. You know, lower the expectations, let go of that demand to be productive. Turn your attention now in the spare moments, however many moments you have, toward things that feel restorative to your body, heart, mind. One of the urgings that I think try to invite people into is creativity or being in nature. And when we're in that sort of flow with nature or flow with creativity, we're engaging our involuntary attention. It's sort of a flow. It's easier. And it's that experience is restorative. So when we're engaging in that sort of restorative experience, we're really filling the well for our more directed and focused attention. If we have things in our lives like work or taking care of a family where our focused attention is still required. So those activities can be replenishing.
And that sounds like a kind of an informal way of engaging mindfulness, if one doesn't have experience with it, to actually engage mindfully without calling it a practice, without, you know, sort of putting on a saffron robe or something.
Absolutely. It's just being in the present moment. We can do that no matter what we're doing. If we're, you know, I was joking with Kaya on the phone yesterday about how a lot of people are making bread now. Okay, can we make bread mindfully? Can you feel the texture and the temperature of the dough in your fingers? Can you bring the bread to your nose and notice what it smells like? Can you, after the bread is baked, can you taste the bread? Just being present in the moment. And that, too, is restorative.
You're talking about Kaya Findlay, our producer, who spoke with you yesterday to help prepare for this segment. And I think that's an important point. So I want to underscore it, Jen, and stick with you. And I've got a question for Jennifer, too. But that we probably should do something so that going out in the woods is restorative and great. But you know what's going to happen to me? I'm going to be walking in the woods, thinking about all the other things I should be doing, wondering what it's going to mean not to get a check and all of that sort of thing. And I'm going to miss a lot. So if you're talking about feeling the bread and feeling the dough in your fingers smelling, it does suggest an extra step of mindfulness to tell yourself to do something or not to do something while you're engaged in these other practices.
Right. And the mind is wandering. You know, a lot of people say, well, I don't practice mindfulness because I can't do it right. And there's a misconception about mindfulness that we're always having focused attention. We're always being in the present moment. And the nature of the mind is to wander. And so the practice is really about noticing when the attention wanders. And lately, most people's attention are wandering to worry or fear. So when the mind wanders and we become aware that the mind wanders, then we bring the attention back to whatever we're doing in the moment, back to the feel of the bread, back to the conversation that we're in, back to the task that we're doing for work.
Jennifer, you know, self-care is one solution. We're talking about ways that we can become more mindful and make sure that we're taking care of ourselves to balance this mental and physical health at this time. But self-care sometimes has a lot of stigma attached to it. How do you coach people around that?
Well, one way to think about it is the stress of this pandemic doesn't necessarily have to send us into a threat defense response. And one of the ways to turn it around is to be resourced. So maybe we drop the word self-care. And we think, what are the resources that I could surround myself with, that I could put on my daily plan, like our listener said, that would help me to actually respond to this moment, knowing that I have choices, that maybe I don't have to respond by freezing. And I've certainly gone through this in the last weeks. My response to stress is to freeze and to get completely shut down and then to get depressed. And so I had to remember this and practice this myself. What are the things that I could have? And they're not going to be sexy or fun. They're not going to obviously involve massage. There may be not a scented candle in sight. But the things that are going to allow me to remember that I am powerful, that I do have choice, that I am loved, that I don't have to just fold up and go through this curled up in the fetal position.
Yeah, and so it is those small moments, which we all have, as you suggest, no matter what else is going on, there are these tiny little moments if we're paying attention, and certainly mindfulness can help appreciate those small moments as the pandemic has limited a lot of our leisure options, even going out in the woods. Sarah Simpson is a psychotherapist in Asheville, and she shares how she's been rethinking some of those limitations.
COVID is certainly enforcing a lot of restrictions on how we live, and we have a lot fewer choices in general. I like to use journal therapy with clients, and I'm really into journaling and diaries myself. One of the prompts I like to give people is called the Alpha Poem, which forces them to just pick a word that they build a poem around, like coronavirus, for instance, and you would write that word down the left-hand side of the page, and then you would start each line of the poem with the consecutive letter in that word. So the first line of the poem would have to start with a C word, and the second line would have to start with an O word, and the third an R word, etc. And it's just one example of how restrictions can actually be really freeing creatively.
That's Sarah Simpson, a psychotherapist in Asheville, talking about how poetry and restrictions can help us think creatively. Jen, I know that you use writing as a meditation practice, in fact, and a mindfulness exercise, as well as photography. Tell us how those activities can play into all of this.
Well, I think two ways. One, it brings people in a more focused way into the present moment. And if we're inviting people to write in a meditative way, that's just focusing on whatever arises in the sensations in the body or feelings in the heart or thoughts in the mind. And so it's very present moment focused. There are also a lot of really great studies about the healing power of writing and how that can boost immunity and support long-term coping. Photography, there's some great studies about mindful photography boosting happiness. And, you know, it doesn't have to be this big, major practice. You know, if I invite someone to make a phone photograph in a moment of something that brought them joy in the day, well, that's bringing their attention to joy. When we're stressed, our minds are going to be focused on what's not going well, what we should be protecting ourselves against. So we have to incline our minds toward joy. And photography is a great, great way to do that. You know, what did you notice that was beautiful today? What brought you joy in this moment? What are you grateful for? Make photographs of those things.
Yeah, that's a great way to prepare the mind to be open to those joys that happen that you might otherwise miss. What about the idea, too? I was thinking of photography of going around the house that you've lived in for the past, I don't know, 10 years. And start noticing the things that you've never noticed before. In photography, I would guess, you know, if you had a camera in your hand, you say, well, now I want you to frame particular things and look at your house in a way, or your room, your apartment in a way that you've never seen it before. I wonder if that, Jen, would also be kind of an exercise.
I love that. I've actually been doing that. And there's some photographers' competitions that are accepting entries on, you know, photograph your experience in your house during the pandemic. And I think it is a way of shifting perspective, seeing things in a new way, discovering delight and joy, noticing what, you know, how you feel, what feelings looking at the objects in that certain corner evokes, and relating with the objects around us differently. So I love that practice.
Jennifer, you've written a book about all this. I assume most of that was written before all of this, and I wonder what you're seeing change, or if you've even had some new thoughts about the very subject that you're expert in this moment.
I have. It's interesting. I mean, I've written a book called Why Bother, and a lot of us are asking the question, why bother when my job can be taken, when my business can suddenly be slammed shut? And what I'm finding, I think, is that people are really discovering what they naturally bother about. They naturally bother about everything we're talking about, connection, beauty, creativity, being with their families until they drive them crazy. You know,
connecting after. Not being with their family.
Yeah. Hiding in the bathroom. So I think what I'm hearing a lot is people are saying, I really know what I care about now in a new way. How am I going to maintain it when life starts back up again? So that's something that I couldn't, of course, anticipated when I was writing the book.
Well, Jen, I wonder about that very question. And so you can't answer this question, but I've got time, so I'm going to ask you. How do you think we're going to come through this? Obviously, people are going to pick up new techniques and see things in new ways. Many people will. Will we be able to carry it through, or are we going to be choked by the weeds of everyday life once things get going again?
Well, I think we'll probably come through this like we come through most things. Some of us will come through it with new awareness and new insights and with a clearer sense of what matters most, and we'll make effort to devote to that. Some of us will move forward with, continuing to not be so aware. I mean, I think everybody's different personality and levels of awareness contribute to how we end up on the other side. But I think I'm seeing a lot more people get in touch with what matters most and say that they at least have an intention of wanting to move forward. And I think, you know, I'm hopeful that folks like myself and Jennifer will be continually supportive of helping people learn how to take what they're insights are during this time and know how to take gradual action to move them forward.
Jen Johnson is a mindfulness coach and counselor in Wilmington. Jennifer Loudon is a personal growth specialist and author of Why Bother? Discover the Desire for What's Next. Thank you both for being on our program.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Good to talk with you, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Leisure time, how about taking in a movie? We want to know what you're watching to get a break from the stay-at-home order, or perhaps intensify the stay-at-home order. What movies make you feel like you're in another place? Maybe it's Oz with Dorothy and The Wizard of Oz, or maybe The Blues Brothers makes you feel like you're in Chicago, or maybe you're in Chicago and want to be somewhere else. What films make you feel like you're in another place? Send your picks to SOT@WUNC.org. Tweet at us at #SOTMovie to be on the next Movies on the Radio. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hollab-Mormon, Kaya Findlay, and Stacia Brown. Josie Taras is our intern. Jenny Lawson is our technical director. Al Wadarski also helped engineer the show today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.